Mimi Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. Republican National Convention in Milwaukee. This is Democracy Now!
It is a great honor to move that J.D. Vance be nominated by acclamation by this Republican National Convention as its candidate for the office of Vice President of the United States of America.
America's Hitler, reprehensible, and a terrible candidate. That's how Ohio Senator J.D. Vance once described Donald Trump. But on Monday, the 39-year-old former Marine and author of Hillbilly Elegy stood side by side at the Republican National Convention with Trump as the former president made his first public appearance since surviving an assassination attempt on Saturday, his ear bandaged. We'll speak to the acclaimed sociologist Arlie Russell Hochschild and Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist David K. Johnston. We'll also look at a shocking decision by a Trump-appointed judge to dismiss the classified documents case against Trump. Then we go to the streets of Milwaukee, where protesters marched on the RNC.
We're given a genocidal man and a fascist man, and that is a terrible decision to pick from.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, where breaking with convention, war, peace, and the presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. We're broadcasting from Milwaukee. Donald Trump has selected freshman Ohio Senator J.D. Vance as his running mate. Republicans celebrated the decision while Democrats warned against Vance's extremist views, with President Biden labeling him a clone of Trump. The 39-year-old former Marine gained fame after writing the best-selling memoir, Hillbilly Elegy, a memoir of a family and culture in crisis, about growing up in Appalachia. He won a close Republican Senate primary in 2022, in part thanks to the billionaire tech investor Peter Thiel, who poured a record-breaking $10 million into his campaign. J.D. Vance's political positions have shifted dramatically over the years. Once a Trump critic, J.D. Vance went on to embrace the MAGA movement and far-right positions on abortion, the climate, immigration, and other issues. Donald Trump appeared alongside J.D. Vance Monday at the Republican National Convention as he made his first public showing since Saturday's assassination attempt. Trump appeared with a bandaged ear as he sat next to J.D. Vance, and Republicans formally nominated Trump and Vance for the 2024 ticket. We'll have more on J.D. Vance and the first day of the Republican National Convention after headlines. Meanwhile, in related news, Elon Musk said he'll give $45 million per month to the new pro-Trump super PAC, America PAC. Outside the Fiserv Forum, where the RNC is taking place here in Milwaukee, activists gathered to protest the Republican agenda.
We're really proud to be marching within sight and sound of the convention, letting the Republicans know that we are here. We care about the climate, we care about immigrant rights, we care about Palestine. There is a large contingent of different organizations marching because they want to let them know that these are the issues people care about today.
Meanwhile, Sherry Hankala, national spokesperson for the Poor People's Army, was arrested Monday as she attempted to deliver a citizen's arrest to Republican officials whom the group is accused of crimes against humanity. Just hours earlier, she spoke to Democracy Now! About that action and more. Go to democracynow.org to see that interview. A federal judge in Florida has dismissed special counsel Jack Smith's criminal case against Donald Trump over his mishandling of classified documents after leaving the White House. On Monday, the Trump-appointed U.S. Judge Aileen Cannon sided with Trump's lawyers, who argued Attorney General Merrick Garland's appointment of the special counsel was unlawful because Smith had not been appointed by Biden or confirmed by the Senate. Cannon also ruled Smith had been improperly funded by the Treasury Department. Cannon's legal rationale drew from a concurring opinion by far-right Justice Clarence Thomas in the Supreme Court's historic ruling Trump v. United States, which grants presidents broad immunity from prosecution. A federal grand jury had indicted Trump on 40 felony counts, 32 violations of the Espionage Act for willful retention of national defense information, and another 8 counts of obstructing justice. The Justice Department is expected to appeal the ruling, but the legal victory has given Trump another boost as he officially accepts the presidential nomination this week here at the RNC. Democrats slammed the decision by Judge Cannon. President Biden called the dismissal specious. Meanwhile, Florida Republican Congressmember Matt Gaetz reacted to the news by calling Aileen Cannon a, quote, future Supreme Court justice. We'll have more on this story later in the broadcast with Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist David K. Johnston. Investigations continue into the suspected gunman in Saturday's failed assassination attempt against Donald Trump at a rally in Butler, Pennsylvania. The FBI is analyzing 20-year-old Thomas Matthew Crook's cell phone, though no apparent motive has yet to emerge. Crooks was a nursing home employee who'd registered to vote as a Republican, though his acquaintances say he was fairly quiet with no overt political leanings. Federal investigators believe he acted alone, but they say they're still exploring all avenues. Meanwhile, congressional Republicans have called on the Secret Service Director, Kimberly Cheadle, to testify about apparent failures ahead of and in response to the incident. Cheadle has rejected calls to resign. Video emerged Monday of witnesses warning law enforcement of the gunman 2 minutes before he began shooting from the roof of a nearby building. A local NBC affiliate reports the shooter was spotted by law enforcement nearly 30 minutes before he opened fire. In an interview with NBC's Lester Holt Monday, President Biden was questioned about language he's used while campaigning against Trump, including telling Democratic donors, quote, it's time to put Trump in the bullseye.
It was a mistake to use the word. I didn't say crosshairs. I meant bullseye. I meant focus on him. Focus on what he's doing. Focus on his policies. Focus on the number of lies he told in the debate. Focus. I mean, there's a whole range of things that, look, I'm not the guy that said I want to be a dictator on day one. I'm not the guy that refused to accept the outcome of the election. I'm not the guy who said that won't accept the outcome of this election automatically. You can't only love your country when you win.
President Biden also repeated his earlier call on Sunday to cool down the political rhetoric. The head of UNRWA, the UN's Palestinian Refugee Agency, said its Gaza headquarters has been, quote, flattened and turned into a battlefield, unquote, as Israeli forces continue their scorched earth campaign in Gaza City. Israeli attacks are also continuing throughout the Gaza Strip, including in Deir al-Balah, where survivors search through rubble for their loved ones after fresh airstrikes brought down at least one building Monday.
My mother, an elderly woman, was sitting with me upstairs. She went downstairs, and after 5 minutes, I pulled her out from under the rubble. We also pulled my sister out from under the rubble, and my sister's children, too. Those who died are my mother, my sister, and my sister's children. Children. One was 2.5 years old, and the other two, I don't know what happened to them. God willing, may God save them.
Turkey has condemned Israel's military for destroying the Turkish-Palestinian Friendship Hospital, Gaza's only specialized cancer center, after using it as a military base for months. Turkish officials said it's further proof of Israel's, quote, systematic policy aimed at the annihilation of the Palestinian people, unquote, and vowed to pursue Israel in international courts. Here in the U.S., Secretary of State Antony Blinken told two top Israeli officials the civilian death toll in Gaza is unacceptably high during an Israeli visit to Washington, D.C. Israel's killed at least 38,700 Palestinians in Gaza since October 7th, though the true death toll is likely much higher. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is still expected to address Congress on July 24th, despite the reported concern about the death toll and mounting objections among Democrats to Netanyahu's appearance. The European Union has announced sanctions against five Israeli settlers and three other entities responsible for serious and systematic human rights abuses against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem. Those sanctions include the group Tzav 9, which the EU said regularly blocks humanitarian aid trucks with food, water, and fuel headed to Gaza. Also on the list were Benzion Gopstein, founder of the far-right Jewish supremacist group Lachava, which means the flame, and Ishar Man. All three have also been sanctioned by the U.S. government. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said he plans to host a second international peace summit in Kyiv this fall to discuss Ukraine's failure. 92 countries attended a similar summit in Switzerland last month. Though Russia and China did not attend, Zelensky spoke after returning from last week's NATO summit in D.C.
I believe that we're ready to hold the second summit sooner rather than later. And I believe that representatives of Russia should be present at the second summit.
Last month's summit discussed three of Zelensky's 10-part formula for peace, covering food security, nuclear safety, and the release of prisoners of war and children. It's unclear if Moscow will be willing to attend a follow-up summit, though a Russian official last week rejected the idea. A Russian court has convicted U.S.-Russian journalist Masha Gessen in absentia Monday, sentencing them to 8 years in prison for remarks made in 2022 about the invasion of Ukraine. Gessen, who lives in the U.S., was found guilty of spreading false information when they spoke in an interview about the massacre of hundreds of people by Russian forces in the eastern Ukrainian city of Bucha. You can see our interviews with Masha Gessen about the war in Ukraine, Gaza, and many other topics at democracynow.org. In El Salvador, children have been subjected to serious human rights violations under President Nayib Bukele's violent crackdown on gangs. That's according to Human Rights Watch, which has just released a report detailing the arbitrary detention, torture, and other forms of abuse against children who've been arrested during El Salvador's state of exception that's been in force since March 2022. The report says detained children are held in overcrowded prisons, are not provided adequate food or health care, and have been denied access to their lawyers and visits with family members. Many have been convicted in unfair trials without due process. And in New York, a coalition of immigration and civil rights groups has filed a complaint on behalf of immigrants detained at the Buffalo Federal Detention Facility over chronic abuse there. The complaint accuses Immigration and Customs Enforcement of engaging in a brutal retaliation campaign against detained people who participated in a peaceful hunger strike to protest dire conditions inside the jail, being denied access to free calls to their families, and ICE's practice of locking immigrants in their cells for 18 hours a day. ICE officials threaten the hunger strikers with physical violence and placing them in solitary confinement. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. Coming up, we look at Donald Trump's running mate, J.D. Vance, who once described Trump as America's Hitler. Stay with us. Youth and the Maiden, performed by Amadeus Quartet. For our TV audience, you're seeing some of the marriage celebration of Shar Simpson and former Democracy Now! Fellow Nemo Allen. Congratulations from all of us to the newlyweds. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. America's Hitler, reprehensible, cultural heroine, noxious, a terrible candidate. That's how Ohio Senator J.D. Vance once described Donald Trump. But on Monday, Trump tapped the 39-year-old to be his running mate, capping an extraordinary rise for Vance, who was just elected to the Senate in 2022. J.D. Vance first gained fame as the author of the best-selling memoir Hillbilly Elegy, a memoir of a family and culture in crisis about growing up in Appalachia. The book was also made into a movie. Vance is a graduate of Yale Law School who served in the Marines and became a venture capitalist. He won a close Republican Senate primary in 2022, in part thanks to billionaire tech investor Peter Thiel, who spent a record-breaking $10 million to support Vance's campaign. After years of criticizing Trump, Vance shifted his views to embrace the MAGA movement. In a major profile, Politico reporter Ian Ward describes this shift by writing, quote, Vance has completed a dramatic evolution from outspoken never-Trumper to unwavering Trump loyalist and dogged defender of the ex-president's most authoritarian assertions, from the lie that the 2020 election was stolen to the legally dubious claim the president is immune from criminal prosecution, unquote. On Monday, President Biden criticized Vance as a, quote, clone of Trump on the issues. We begin today's show hearing J.D. Vance in his own words describing Donald Trump. In 2016, he appeared on NPR's Fresh Air.
I'm going to vote third party because I can't stomach Trump. I think that he's noxious and is leading the white working class to a very dark place.
In another 2016 media appearance, J.D. Vance spoke to MSNBC about sexual abuse allegations against Donald Trump.
Well, this is sort of a he said, she said, right? And at the end of the day, do you believe Donald Trump, who always tells the truth? Just kidding. Or do you believe that woman on that tape? No.
To talk more about J.D. Vance, we're joined now from Pikeville, Kentucky, by Arlie Russell Hochschild, sociologist and author. Her forthcoming book is titled Stolen Pride, Lost Shame, and the Rise of the Right. It's a follow-up to her 2016 bestseller, Strangers in Their Own Land, Anger and Mourning on the American Right. The book was a finalist for the National Book Award and has been described as a Rosetta Stone for understanding the rise of Donald Trump. Arlie Hochschild, thanks so much for being with us. If you can start off by just responding to the news yesterday that Donald Trump had chosen J.D. Vance to be his vice presidential running mate. You have been on a panel when both your books were out, Hillbilly Elegy and Strangers in Their Own Land. Talk about the rise of J.D. Vance, what he means, and what President Trump means.
You know, thank you, Amy, for the invitation. You know, I'm here in Pikeville. That is a 40-minute drive to Jackson, Kentucky, where Vance spent his summers, mainly with his mama, who really brought him up when his mother succumbed to drugs. So there's that story, personal story, that I think Trump picked him to represent. But for me, the real question is, you know, there's a saying, which is, without wood, there would be no fire, from Proverbs. And so what's the support for Vance? The support, why do 40% of Americans, you know, think this is the way to go? I think what we need to do is to back up and look at the larger story of red state, blue state differences. I think here in Pikeville and in this area, and this area is the whitest and second poorest congressional district in the country. It's Kentucky 5. And it's used to be at the center politically, and in the 90s, you know, two-thirds of this area were Blue Dog Democrats, but they've voted 80% for Trump in the last two elections. So what's happened to Vance as a person sort of happened to this region, and not just this region. It used to be on the left, and it's gone right. And so what's the wood that's leading the fire? What's the reason for this? I think that's what my book's about, and that's what I think we who are alarmed at this trend need to look at.
Talk about your work and what you found over these years. We last spoke in 2016. You'd spent 5 years with some of Donald Trump's biggest supporters researching your book. And talk about how things have changed from leading into the first presidency of Donald Trump to what's happening today. And also, Arlie Russell Hochschild, how people have responded to the horror of the assassination attempt on Trump on Saturday in Pennsylvania.
Well, the people that I'm talking to here, it only consolidates their sympathy for Trump and their determination to support him. And that's because they see him as a supporter of them. To answer your question, what makes this current book, Stolen Pride, kind of different from my previous book, Strangers in Their Own Land, is that I'm focusing actually on this issue of democracy, what people feel about it, and why do they feel so strongly. And, you know, there's a regional story, and that's that coal jobs are out. They have blamed the liberal war on coal for that loss. Opiate addiction has come in big time and hasn't stopped in this region. Mainly poor whites are the victims of it. And these are in under-regulated states, I should say, Kentucky and Tennessee and West Virginia, let these opiates come in. And they've done untold damage. So these are people who have just felt down, just a sense of terrible loss, free fall loss. And now many are leaving the region, the young, the most educated. And so this becomes an area of loss. And I think it speaks to a lot of the red states. And they don't feel the government has offered answers with dignity to them for this loss. So in a way, I see what Vance's story is kind of a regional story. And I think the regional story kind of speaks to a larger story. In a way, we're used to thinking of countries like Mexico and Philippines or Kerala, India, as kind of sending people out to richer countries. So there's the metropole that has many jobs and kind of rich, and there are poor states that migrate to them. Well, there's a domestic version of that. Kentucky is the Mexico of a domestic system like that. It's sending its young and its educated out. And that's a tremendous loss for them. And once a person from Kentucky goes, you know, to San Francisco or New York, they feel labeled as a hillbilly. One guy told me that even going to Lexington, just hours away, but it's a city, when they hear your accent, and you're in a store and looking at things, they begin to follow you around because they think you don't have the money to buy what you want to buy. So there's a kind of a label and a shame. And that's the next story I would tell, that it's not just this logic of economic haves and have-nots. There's an emotional logic that goes along with it of shame and pride. Here in Kentucky, here in Appalachia, very proud people, very gifted people, but who've suffered this big loss, they shaming themselves, especially after addiction, kind of breaks up many families, does irreparable harm. They shame themselves, and then they feel like people in the blue states are just slinging epithets at them. They feel shamed. And I think Donald Trump comes in as the shame president. He comes in with an anti-shaming ritual that relieves them of this. And I think that's a lot of the steam behind the MAGA enthusiasts for the Republican ticket.
Arlie, I want to go to the trailer of the Netflix film, Hillbilly Elegy, based on J.D. Vance's bestseller, Hillbilly Elegy, a memoir of a family and culture in crisis about growing up in Appalachia.
Oh, I thought your mama was going to be all right. Be happy. I know I could have done better. But you got to decide. You want to be somebody or not?
I've been doing real good. I just had a down month.
I got an interview tomorrow, Mom. Otherwise, I...
Oh, you know me. I always land on my feet.
Don't look at that. Come on. Come on. Don't you look at me. You look at me. You look at me.
You let her get away with this every time.
I told you that I would do better.
You always say that. You're lying.
I always try.
You got to think about these kids.
What do you think I've been thinking about since I was 18 years old, huh? Never had a life where I wasn't thinking about the kids.
Do you actually want to be dead, Mom? Or are you just too lazy to try?
Oh, I tried. Plenty.
You've always got a reason. It's always someone else's fault. At some point, you're going to have to take responsibility, or someone else is going to have to step in.
Who? Huh? Who? You?
Hasta la vista, baby.
How many times you've seen this?
Oh, about 100. Everyone in this world is one of three kinds. Good Terminator, a bad Terminator, and neutral.
You're a good Terminator.
Yeah, wasn't always. I had to learn. You could too.
I love you. I promise that I'm gonna do better.
Judy, you gotta write your own life.
Don't make us your excuse, JD.
Family's the only thing that means a goddamn. You learn it.
So that's the trailer for the film Hillbilly Elegy, which is based on J.D. Vance's book Hillbilly Elegy. And wondering, Arlie Russell Hochschild, if you can talk about the significance of this book. Your book came out about the same time as how you came to know J.D. Vance again, who then became senator from Ohio and is now the youngest vice presidential candidate at the age of 39. Talk about Hillbilly Elegy.
You know, I think it's a brilliant film, by the way.